Hi, I'm Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
all my life I had a fight.
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show, que show,
que show.
What's happening, dude?
Estoy llenísimo, güey.
Oh my gosh. And in the official Latinos Who Lunch studio,
yes,
which
ma'am.
Is my kitchen, we have the one and only Yosimar Reyes in the house.
Hi there.
Bienvenido.
How are you?
She's well.
Oh my gosh.
Thriving.
Thriving in Las Vegas?
Las Vegas.
Bitch, you've been out every night.
I know. Like, I feel like I came on vacation, but I feel like I'm one of those RuPaul drag queens visiting every fucking club.
Oh, my God.
And making appearances.
And then your gigs at all the schools
and
here.
All those gigs.
You're really on tour.
I'm on tour. I'm Valentina.
Oh, shit. Well, we just had some Chinese food.
It was disgusting. It was so good.
I know. It's that Chinese food that's like from the neighborhood Chinese spot.
Mm.
It's just like sugar, batter, fried.
And chili.
Mm.
It was so good.
Stir fried goodness.
Yeah, bro. And this little modelito to chase it.
Oh, yes.
Yes, man. Drinking it's in the wonderful. Podcast is becoming a thing.
I know. We have a problem. Yes. We should talk.
We're going to become Latinos who pistean.
Oh.
But I feel like the best cheese make comes from pistear.
That's true. That's true.
Yes.
Are we drinking enough? Do we need a refill?
Soon? I got to drive, so I only have okay. this.
Very responsible. Wow.
Nada con exceso, todo con medida.
True, true. What's your favorite kind of Chinese food?
The good kind of Sichuan Chinese food.
I don't know what that means.
That means spicy shit. That's what it means.
Mm.
It's like a specific region in China, and they put a lot of fucking chili in their stuff. So That's my favorite kind of Chinese food. ¿Y la tuya?
Orange chicken, like every fucking Mexican.
Yeah.
Hello.
What kind of dish? I thought, okay.
Yeah. Mandarin. I don't know.
Esa trajo todo el catálogo. Like, oh, it's from this specific region.
Fucking
girl.
Food
you say
network.
You say what kind of Chinese food, not like what
girl,
plate.
Yeah.
What dish? Oh my gosh. So have you been to any fancy spots on the strip?
You know what? I'm so ghetto like that. Like, I'm like bougie ghetto. Like, for me, like, fancy
ghetto.
It's, yeah, it, for me, fancy is Olive Garden type of shit, you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like I have, you know, and it's funny because I've been able to, you know, I've been traveling and going to all these places. And one of the things I was saying is, like, I hate Italian restaurants because I don't know how to pronounce none of that shit.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what wine goes with whatever. Like, it's not some, I don't have the cultural knowledge or whatever to enjoy those kind of spots. And sometimes it's just too uptight. And I go with my friends and they're so loud and you can't really eat in places like that when you're that loud.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
No, just whatever, girl. Pupusas.
Yes.
Yes.
I know, but I feel like you're going to just go to more places and eat at more places like that. And you'll be like, yeah, bitch, bring me this. Yeah. I know exactly what
I know.
Like
I want to be like Selena in that movie. Like, oh, excuse me, man, we don't need the dress.
Yeah, that's going to be you.
My thing when I go to conferences is Indian food. I don't know what it is. But every time I'm in a place by myself in a conference, I gotta have Indian food because I don't eat it in town.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I always just go, anytime I've traveled, I just like look for brown people. I'm like, okay, brown people are there.
Ahí está buena la comida.
Yeah, I'm gonna go there.
A las quecas.
Yes, exactly. So, other than jotear, what else are you doing here in Las Vegas?
So, I don't know. I got invited to come speak at UNLV, and today we spoke at Nevada State College, and then tomorrow at I think it's a city college. But I've just been, you know, talking about my work as a writer and as a poet, and and just trying to promote the projects that I'm working on. So,
okay.
And we had the opportunity to listen to you yesterday. It was amazing. It was so good. You gave us a preview of your one-man show. We don't have to give details if you don't want to.
No, the one-man show was,
It
I'm
was so
developing.
Good.
It's gonna be cute, hopefully. I just want people to laugh.
You are funny.
Yes, you.
I mean, I knew you were funny, but oh my God, when you have a crowd in front of you, I can see brings you to life, you know?
And you were able to make them think and make them laugh and then get them sad and back to laughing. Como si nada, cabrón.
Yeah.
And that's a gift.
I know it's interesting. When I started performing, I was 16. I used to write these really heavy poems, like really angsty. Because, you know, I was undocumented. Well, I'm still undocumented. And I'm also a little queer, so I didn't know how to navigate. And they were really depressing. And then I would notice how the energy shifted. And then I think I just grew into myself, into my skin to feel comfortable. And now, like, it's very interesting that when you're a public speaker, you can do that, you know, take people everywhere. And then at the end, I always try to land them in a high note. Like, at least you go leave the space feeling like, oh my God, I relate to that story. Or like, oh, that's cool. Like, I remember that. And then people just go home happy.
And how, what is the feedback that you get for, like, is this the first time that you do that one man show practice or?
No, I've done a couple of readings, but I think the feedback's always been like it's relatable and it's like, oh my God, I have an aunt like that, or I have a cousin like that or whatever. I think for me, it's been really positive. So I'm just hopeful like when we do premiere it, people would feel like, you know, like they're a part of this experience.
Yeah.
And one of the things I want you to elaborate, I want you to talk about your abuelita, because that was the center of the piece that at least you showed us in the piece yesterday. So I want you to tell us a little bit more about your relationship that you have still or not with your abuela.
Yeah. So my grandma's like a huge part of my work, and I bring her in all the time because I feel like, I don't know, grandmas are like, I was talking to my friend yesterday. I'm like, grandmas are like my kryptonite. Like, like, girl, I'll do anything for, even if it's not my grandma, just an old, an old lady. Like, I just want to hug her, be nice to her, you know? Like, I don't know. I just have this huge respect for elders.
Did she raise you?
Yeah, my grandma raised me. I wasn't raised by my mom or my dad. It was like very migrant like that. Like, my mom came here first. She sent for us, and my grandma crossed us across the border, and she was supposed to just drop us off and then go back, but she ended up staying. But I, you know, when I was three, they made me choose who they want to live with. I'm like, I want to live with my grandma, because my grandma, you know, she didn't hit me like that. My mom was really strict with la chancla, and so I decided to live with my grandma. And since then, it was just me and her and my grandpa everywhere, just the three of us. So, and the thing about my grandma, too, is that she watches a lot of Televisa and all these novelas. I remember what novelas were a huge part in my household from 7 to 11, girl. Pura novela, drama after drama.
Yes, yes, yes.
Una que se caía por las escaleras del edificio.
Siempre hay alguien que se cae de las escaleras.
Yeah. Someone got amnesia and then ended up in the forest and some curandera found her and brought her back to life.
Yes.
I know all the plot twists. So my grandma, I think she adapted those kind of dramatic scenarios. So when I was growing up, she would use her age or like these dramatic things to get what she wanted, like a tantrum.
I feel like we all do it. I mean, if you grew up with Televisa, that happens to you a little bit.
Yeah, she was very much like that. But it was funny. But now I bring her in because she's so witty. And she's hood. Like, she's just a hood-ass lady. I think I learned a lot of things from her. Like, for me, it's like I'm very much into self-respect and dignity. I don't like people talking shit about me. Like, if you have something to say, you should say it to my face. I very like that. Yeah. And my grandma was very much like that con las señoras. And then I grew up in the hood in apartment complexes. So it's people on top of people. I remember one time this was this lady that was talking shit about the tamales my grandma was selling.
Oh, shit.
Girl, I was in fucking elementary school. This is so traumatic.
yes, let's get to the trauma.
My grandma went, because she's very much like that. She would go confront people. She's like, oh, she said something about me. Let me go talk to her. Maybe I didn't hear. Or maybe, you know, someone's manipulated. So she went up to her door and she's like, hey, I heard you're saying stuff. And the lady's like, what if I am? And then my grandma just reached over and snatched her out the apartment.
Oh my God.
But my grandma's an old lady, you know what I mean?
I was just gonna ask, how old was she?
I mean, this is like when she was like, what, 75? Like, you know?
Oh my God. It's stupid, I'm pelo.
And then the kids in the neighborhood, because it was a big, you know, when there's neighborhood fights, it gets bigger because of the crowd.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, hey, man, isn't that your grandma? I was like, oh, my God. And then my grandma, and then I was like, best, like, that's what happens when you talk shit.
Oh my gosh.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I have a different relationship. Well, I had a different relationship with my grandparents, but it's interesting to hear both of your stories because Favi also, in a way, grew up with your grandparents.
I think when I was like 5, because I would stay with my grandma during the summertime in the hood. Mm-hmm. And my mom would just leave me there because I would cry and cry and cry if I didn't stay with my grandma in the summer. And then one day it was like so dramatic, Televisa style. My grandma was holding me by one hand, my mom was holding me another one. It was like the week before school. And they were like pulling me, tug of war, back and forth. And my grandma's, no, no quiere irse. And my mom, es mi hijo, yo lo parí. And she was
just... Oh my god. I know, I was like, if I think so my grandma made me queer, you know.
Oh my god, for real.
Cause she would make me like, she raised me like a girl. Like I would cook, I would clean. Like it was very interesting in my house. And then she would buy me, my grandma, when Lil Kim's album Notorious Kim came out, I wanted that album because I'm a huge female MC fan. And my grandma walked me to Circuit City porque oh, lo necesito para la escuela. And she took me
mira
to
que manipulador.
She took me to Circuit City, and because they had parental adverse or whatever the sign, I couldn't buy it because I was a kid. My grandma took the Lil Kim CD and she purchased it at Circuit City so I could listen to
it. Oh my god.
So I was like, oh, my grandma's so cute.
But maybe, don't you think maybe your grandma just knew you were queer?
Yeah, she's like, ay, pues ya que ya me salió así.
Ponte a limpiar.
Ya ni modo, ponte a hacer los buñuelos, ya que nos queda.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So is it just your grandma or do you use a lot of members of your family as a base for your narrative?
I use a lot of my family members because I feel like they're so interesting. I think, like, I love my family. I think we have, you know, every family is dysfunctional, but I feel like even in the holidays or whatever, there's something that everyone contributes to, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. like, and it's like a group of friends. Like, everybody contributes something. There's something you don't like about them that's annoying, or like some of them are messes. But I think ultimately, that's what family is. It's so dysfunctional. And I like that. I liked being able to tap into the messiness and also always giving them the benefit of the doubt, you know, because we're all healing and growing, as, you know, the brujas say.
Brujequis.
Brujequis.
Brujex.
That's my new excuse now. When people, when I fuck up, like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm healing.
I know. I was healing that day.
I was healing that day, girl. I'm sorry.
Con la cruda. No, but I think that's important because one of the recurring themes in a lot of artists that I've seen that we interview here in Latinos Who Lunch is to counteract the negative narratives and the dramatic narratives that exist about who we are. You do it as an undocumented person in the United States, and you even title some of your lectures UndocuJoy. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes, and can I just say that was like refreshing. Yes. Like, I didn't expect that because, you know, whenever you go see an undocumented person,
quiere llorar.
You're like, okay, here we go. Like, get ready.
Yeah.
It was just so nice to just like laugh and let go. And like watching you talk was just like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I can just be here and not have to like relive my own trauma or my family's trauma. Like, this guy's gonna break it down and make it relatable and make it funny. And that was really amazing.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I love humor. I like being funny. I like saying really ridiculous things, like real ridiculous stuff that I'm like, that's like shock value, because I know people are gonna be like, oh my god, did he just say that? Did he say he's on prep so he can be a slip and slide, you know, like. But for me, like, because I think it's funny. I think one of the things that I try to do in my work is just make people realize that we're all a hot mess, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes,
there's nothing wrong with saying like, yo, I don't got my shit together. Like, I think we live in this country forces us to live in these labels or whatever is professional, but I'm like, girl, we're all a mess. Like, you can't tell me something that I don't know. Mm-hmm. So UndocuJoy was basically this idea of showing undocumented people as three-dimensional beings, as messy, as just as, you know,
complicated
as anybody else. And also doing it, moving beyond this very gloom and doom narratives that we show undocumented people. I feel like everybody thinks every undocumented person is in deportation proceedings or like whatever, but I think it's more, and then that's true. I think we need that as well, but I think we need a mental break. For me, it's like the mental break. When I make the issue of me being undocumented so serious, that's when I notice I start becoming depressed. So I think my coping mechanism is to be that trickster, you know, that, you know, Shakespeare had like that one character, like the jester, like the, it's like anything is an archetype in literature, that this person is like the fool or the drunk, but they know what's happening and they know how the story is going to end. But in the process, they're making fun of it in order to cope with it.
So what would you say to critics? They will say that sometimes when you add humor to certain realities, you take away from the seriousness of the topic, because we've gotten that here in Latinos Who Lunch, where we might say something serious and then we come back with a joke, and sometimes some people say that we dismiss ourselves by doing that.
I would say write your own play, make your own podcast. Hey, I hate that. I hate people that, it's so easy to deconstruct, especially I think for me when it's an artist, I think that's one of my frustrations, because it's so easy to deconstruct when you're not creating anything. And for me, it's more like I take my time and I know why I say things. Like, I may sound messy and whatever, but I know why I'm posting that. I know why I wrote that. I know why I said that joke. You need to trust as an artist, nothing that I say or do is because I'm just being, you know, that I'm not aware of the impact or what it's going
to
do.
And there's a place for the joke too. Yeah. And you know when to insert
yes,
it.
Yes, I know exactly. When to eclipse. There's a time and a place. I think as an artist, you know what you're creating and when. And I think for me, with people, I get a lot of that, like online or whatever. But for me, it's like, okay, you don't agree, make your own. Like, I did it. You can make your own. Yeah. You don't have to, you know, create your own stuff. And most likely, there will be an audience for your stuff or your style of whatever you want to listen to or whatever play you want to create. Make it all. And I'll go watch it, girl. And then I'll probably be like, oh, maybe you should throw a joke in there. It's too serious.
I love when you were talking about like queers, undocumented people, because of DACA right now, like that's hot and everybody's looking for that one, you know, person to represent an entire community that's like 11 million people. And it's like been boiled down to like 5 people to represent the entire community.
Yeah, I think right now, like, that's what happens. It's like, I think there's a media moment. Like, Ellen DeGeneres just wore a t-shirt that said, we're all dreamers. Cher wants to invite us to live with her. Kim Kardashian tweeted, yeah, I support the dreamers. Like, there's this huge media moment for undocumented people. And I always tell people, like, use it. I think, we should definitely use it. But also, like, be aware about the trendiness that I think right now, since Trump got elected, social justice became such a marketable thing. I think what ends up happening, you know, they used to say sex sells. Now what's selling is social justice, to look as you like you're purchasing something woke or something, like, you know, like you'll see all these corporations that are making, you know, they're catching on, girl.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned yesterday, not only social justice, it's like the tragedy of, I hate this word, of the other is what's selling right now. And everybody wants to be a fucking victim right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think right now, like, that's... But for me, it's like... I mean, for me, like, as a person that grew up with marginalized or that has these kind of pro-press identities, what I mean was most important is agency in being able to have the power to choose when to participate in that mess and when to be like, I'm tired. I don't want to do that interview. I don't want to be represented like that. I want to do something different. And I think that's what DocuJoy became, is like, I'm a happy person. Like, that's how I process things. I maybe, like, that's my own therapy. Like, me going out and clubbing and thotting and bopping at different clubs is the way that I deal with the world. And eventually I'll get over it and I'll find another coping mechanism. But for now, that's what I want to do. And I think people shouldn't try to pigeonhole me into, like, no, you need to be out, you know, getting arrested or protesting and all that. It's not me. Like, I'm too bougie to get arrested, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just people are already doing that work. I want to do something different. But I think that's what happens in these spaces, that people want you to be, I don't know. Like, I don't know where that comes from. A cookie cutter image or like something that you're supposed to be.
It's like white people setting the standard for even our space and our lane. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like...
But it's like what we mentioned before. It's always about appeasing white anxieties. And that's history. Like everything, all the visual culture that has been constructed around us from the European perspective, around us from the US perspective, it's always about that. It's always appeasing white anxieties. And what helps that, it's the image of the victim. And
oh, or like you're saving us so that you're like, yes, comforting us, like
the, or like you're not a threat to me, so I can help you or I can accept you because you
like know. our former guests Carla Rodriguez and Erika Castro is like, why people love to see us cry, you know. And that's why I loved you also do a lot of YouTube videos, mm-hmm, but it was like 1-800 save DACA. Yes. And it was like you charged an extra $200 for each tier.
I hate crying. I hate crying because I'm a thug. Like, I grew up in the hood. Like, yeah, you can't cry. Like, if guys call you like a fag or whatever, the worst thing you could do is cry. Like, you're just like, well, so what? I think that's the kind of culture that I grew up in. And I think right now, like, I want to get rid of that because I'm not in that survival mode anymore. And it's so hard. And I'm a Virgo. So I'm really blunt and forward. And I realize that I have the ability to be a bully because that's how I was raised. It was like a coping thing. And I can say things that are really, really mean. So I need to check myself a lot of times. Like, oh, shit, I was really venenosa. You know, I was being really, bien víbora.
But then on the other side of that is, like, white people like to come to these events for themselves to cry because they feel guilty. And then listening to these fuck... This is the truth. Making them feel... Girl, you know what I'm talking about. Making them feel guilty and having them cry for them. It's like therapy. It's like, okay, aquí estoy. Like, they're you know, paying for their sins, listen to this poor undocumented person's journey or whatever.
Who just, you know, to triumphs besides everything.
Yesterday, somebody had questions and comments and became all about this person. And Anita's like, okay, next.
Yeah. It was I'm so like, girl, good. You can go to confession in another temple, not right here, okay? Like,
this is not therapy
session. I feel bad because, you know, this is like, this is how you know I'm a good person.
Why?
I could be evil like that, but then when they're like, because they're so innocent. I read James Baldwin, right? James Baldwin wrote The Fire Next Time, in which he wrote a letter to his nephew, right? And he's talking about the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, right? And in it, James Baldwin says, like, these countrymen who are your people, they're innocent. They're trapped in their own history. They're trapped in a history that they can't even understand. They're like children. So that means you, as the person that's aware of all this, and this is a challenge, girl.
It is a challenge. I know. I'm looking at you.
Like,
but
that's like, important. Where are you going with this?
Yeah.
James Baldwin was like, you as a person who's experienced this, you also in a way need to understand. You know, like, imagine growing up in a culture that tells you that you are everything, like that you are like the blueprint to success, the blueprint, and to now, I think right now we're living in a culture that, no, you know, it's 2017, girl. Nobody cares about the opinion of straight white men. They're now realizing that, and that's why there's all this panic on all these white men are kind of like having an identity crisis because now they're faced with like the reality that, honestly, you are... Yeah. Nobody cares about you anymore. And pick a struggle, girl.
pick up a tiki torch.
Pick up a yes. And I think that's a revelation of like, that's why they're like, oh, white lives matter. I'm like, no, well, they really don't.
But that's so important that you quote James Baldwin, because we cannot continue fighting the struggle by just like trashing white people when like, yes, that, I mean, there's a lot of things that come from that. But at the same time, as you say, it's like, it's so much more complicated.
And I think also the other thing is like, it's very easy to dismiss it on whiteness or on white people. Yeah. That is the deflection from us looking as the way we also internalize these systems. And I hate that because a lot of people are like, oh, that's the white person. Like, no, girl.
No, girl.
Why are you pointing at me, bitch?
Don't point at me.
No, I was pointing at the ceiling.
That was direct contact.
That was you. No, but I feel like that happens. It's a huge... We use white people to deflect the fact that sometimes it's our own people that are more damaging.
You know what? You ain't lying, bitch. Girl. Because, I mean, I was just at Thanksgiving and... Damn, the racism was real. Like, it always comes out. Like, why do you have to say that? Mm-hmm. Why? My aunts took a trip to Canada, and they're like, you know, it was nice. No había muchos negros. And I'm like bitch, shut the fuck up.
I know. And then you challenge them.
And that's normal. You know, that's normal across Latino families.
Yeah, like the anti-blackness, all that stuff. It's true, and it manifests. And that's why I'm like, I really try to, like... And also, like, there's... I feel like there's people in the world that... everything, they base everything on whiteness. Like, white people are not in my realm like that. Like, I can go to dinner and sit next to them and I don't have to be like, oh, there's a white person sitting. You know, they're exactly. just not in my atmosphere like that. I'm like, girl, go ahead, eat your, you know, like, but there's some people that I have friends like that, girl, I don't want to go out with you because you're just going to deconstruct and I just want to eat my meal. Because sometimes you have to unplug. It's too much.
You you're have
like,
to.
You're super hyper alert about everything. But I also challenge that. I think, like, definitely, I think it's two. It's a complication of living in these kind of different communities or the different realms, because at the same time, our families haven't had access to the same level of knowledge or understandings that we have. Because
and it's a process.
Because they're watching fucking Televisa, you know? And I think, I also think of that, too, of like, okay, I have to teach them with a certain level of compassion, but at the same time call them out on their stuff. Like, I'm not gonna shame, well, I don't want to shame them, but they should definitely not be saying things like that. Like, I think that's an insult.
Like, you know? I was at one point, I remember saying something to my parents, it was something problematic that happened, and he came back to me, he goes, just because I give you the privilege to study doesn't mean that we all have the privilege to learn this stuff. And I was like, fuck, like, there's a way to do things and there's a way to say things, and this is a process, and we come from that system and they gave us the privilege to get over that system, so it's our job to come back and like and educate, you know?
Yeah, it's messy, and that's why for everything I'm like, okay, I have to, and it's hard, it's like I have to learn how to be compassionate, I need to learn how to be, you know, like, not be fucking intense and people like that, but you know, girl, we're human.
But that's also what you do, what Julio does, what other people are doing in the movement is important, because you're controlling that narrative. And you can say when I want to unplug, when I can talk, when I have to educate, when I don't want to educate, when I want to be messy, and I want to do whatever the fuck I want. And that's so, so important that you guys are doing this.
Yeah, I think like the importance of owning your own voice. Because then, like, example, like, you might get suggestions for your podcast. Oh, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. But I think some of it is good feedback, which is good to listen to. Some of it is not. It's somebody else projecting onto something that they can't control. Yeah. And so I think it's important to know how to sort through that. And for me, my work is very important like that. Because I know I walk a fine line between like this academic, woke, whatever space and then the ratchetness. But my motto is like, if you want to change the world, you got to reach the ratchets. And I'm reaching the ratchets. Yes. Because I'm in the club. And sure enough, there's one or three little jotitos that walk up to me like, girl, I love what you're doing. I don't really read, but I love your poems because they remind me of growing up. And that's what I want. I don't want my stuff to exist in things that are not accessible. When my vecinas are like, oh my God, I like the video you created. You should make one of me. You know, like, I want that, because I feel like our communities are not celebrated that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And Babelito and I talk about that all the time, is like this podcast, for example, like, we want to talk about serious shit, but we also want to have fun and we want to make it accessible.
And decide when we want to do that.
And I talk about my art like that a lot of times. But then there's also that line that we're always on, or that I'm always thinking about anyways, like the quality of our work, right? Because, you know, shade, you know, I've gone to a lot of Latinx, Chicanx, woke SX people, art shows, or listen to a lot of podcasts, and the quality is just not there. Mm-hmm. So, like, what can we do?
Because we don't have enough, we automatically celebrate it without being critical about ourselves.
And then we come off as bitches, and
or you come out like that you are, you're implementing a white standard of doing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, no, girl, I just like shit well done. No, I think so. Like, they think that about my writing a lot, because I think I'm overcritical about the stuff that I'm producing, or, you know, like, is this good? I don't know if it's good. I know, you know, there's always like this idea that I want to make it good. I want to make it good, not because there's a certain standard I want to reach, but because I want folks to know that I'm capable, or I just want it to be seen that my community deserves that. My community deserves to be something polished and something that I took a long time to create. And I think that's just like as an artist, like that's why we're so scared to show our work when it's like not done or premiere it, because it's just not ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I see that a lot. And for me, like that's what for a long time I walked that complex. I was like, I don't know if people are reading my stuff because it's good or because I'm undocumented. And if you're reading it because I'm undocumented, then don't read it at all. Yeah. Because you should just I'm having one of those like Frida, when Frida meets Diego at the museum and she tells them, tell me if this shit is good, because if it's not good, I need to go make something else. Like that. I'm having one of those. Like, is this shit good? If not, let me go fucking do some other shit, because I'm not gonna, you know.
And that starts by stop romanticizing our own icons, because we tend to do that. And that's one of the things that you mentioned yesterday too. You said that we need to stop romanticizing our ancestors.
Yeah, I was like, in our communities, I was talking about like the idea of ancestors. Everybody thinks an ancestor is like Grandma Willow, you know, like in Pocahontas, just whispering you like the colonizers are coming. Don't marry that white man, you know, it's gonna be your pitfall, you know. But I was telling people like, I don't know, like I don't think those were my ancestors, because they ain't the motherfuckers that are talking to me. Like for me, it's like your ancestors are that drunk tia that passed away, the, you know, la borracha, la chismosa, like all those are also your ancestors, and we need to celebrate. Like it's like the same thing when people die, everybody wants to say all these good things about them, but like, girl, keep it 100. She's kind of a bitch.
Or like, oh my God, we're Aztec warriors. I'm like, bitch, you're from Downey. Like,
not only that, like, we come from like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different groups. One of them. Two, this was a whole government scheme to create the nation of Mexico is coming from these heroes, where to begin with, they were like these imperialist assholes that were terrorizing the rest of the communities around Lake Texcoco. Like, let's keep it real. Yes, their legacy is important. The art is incredible. Like, I'm going to teach a whole class on the Aztecs, but that's part of the work. Like, to teach and to talk about this shit so we don't romanticize that, so we can stop basing everything that we do on Coatlicue. And
I think for me, like, that's true, because I'm like, I'm from Guerrero, girl. Like, I'm down all the way down there.
Down.
Like, down.
Como dice la Bambi.
Down.
Shout out, Bambi.
Shout out to Bambi Salcedo. I'm all the way down there. So when people have nerves, like, oh, we didn't cross the border crossed us. Like, nah, bitch, I crossed that motherfucker. Mm. Like, I came all the way from down there.
That was a journey.
that was a long journey. I was doing my own Aztec journey from all the way down there.
And when we do that, when we fantasize and romanticize the big groups, we raise other communities, like places like Guerrero, places like Oaxaca. There's all this Afro Mexicanos that nobody talks about and then nobody mentions, because we're so embedded on the idea of the Mexico as a nation based on the Aztecs, not even the Mayans, just the Aztecs.
Yeah, I think like that, definitely. I think like that. And I had a hard time with that, because, like, you know, I grew up in the United States, and I feel like for me, like, growing up, my upbringing was like all these with activists and respecting the fact, you know, indigenous people that were here first, right? And then for me, not having that sense, because I didn't grow up with that. My grandma, you know, for example, like right now, everybody's a bruja, right? Like, it's a trend to be like a bruja.
I just had a new moon ceremony the other day, girl.
Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you believe in, is like that's wonderful. That's you. Like, that's what you're processing. But I was having a thing with my grandma, and she was making, she had this, like, they call it the grandma whatever, where you put weed inside alcohol, like rubbing alcohol. For like your riumas or whatever thing. Like, it's a thing. It's a Mexican.
It doesn't make you a fucking brujo.
So I was recording her. She was doing that. Like, show us how you make your little potion. Or tinctures. Like, tinctures.
Tincture,
are his.
Yeah.
So my grandma was just like, oh, it is bruja. She's like, she was so mad. She's like, no me digas bruja. Yo amo a Dios. You know? But it was interesting, because I grew up with that. And I went back to Mexico on advanced parole, because through DACA you can apply to go back. Yeah. And I went back with this idea of, like, you know, I'm going to get reconnected to my land. I'm going to reconnect it to where I'm from, like, because I'm tired of growing up in a country that says they don't want me. Yeah. And I have to go back. I will go back, and I'll be happy to go back. But I don't know where I come from, so I want to experience what it's like there. And so I went back to Guerrero. all cute, you know, with my little Zara outfits in my bag. Uh-huh. Because she was going to give you some, like, amigas y rivales beach wear, you know, like... In Acapulco, I got there. I was like, bruh, it's so fucking hot here. Bitches are not appreciating this look I put together because people are on survival mode. Like, our houses have air conditioning. I went there. I went back to Mexico to just realize how fucking American I was. Yeah. And for me, I think a lot of times what ended up happening in this country, as people that don't feel, even if you were born here, you know, you don't feel American, right? Because people don't recognize that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's when I started claiming it, because I was like, honestly, there's a huge difference between me being Mexicano in the U.S. than me being Mexicano in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And the real, and I think a lot of us as people of color, we reject the idea that we're American, but we also need to check that, because we also contribute and benefit from some of the atrocities that this country is doing. So for me, it was important to recognize that. And it was fucking painful. Like, yo, I'm fucking American. I've been conditioned. Even the way that my ideas of justice or feminist ideas, like, I was in Guerrero and Atoyac, and I would tell my cousin, like, oh, there's nothing for women here. It's like, yeah, men think they own us, or like, whatever. Like, if the feminism was such a, like, something that I, you know, that's so integral to who I am, it was like, they're not there yet. And for me, it was just like, wow, like, this is intense. Like, where did I learn all these concepts or this idea that the government should benefit the people? And over there, like, the people in Mexico were like, no, the people come into government to be corrupt. Like, it's just like a matter of fact. People lost hope. But yeah, it was interesting to go back just to realize that I'm a fucking American girl, a snobby ass American.
It's true.
Yeah.
People give me shit. That's why I always love to talk about the idea of authenticity. And people are always obsessed, like, these are the best tacos. They're like authentic Mexican, whatever. And I'm like, bitch, those are.
That doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're in Las Vegas. Okay. What's an authentic taco? It's like, this used to be a fucking desert with Native Americans living here. Yes. Like, there's no such thing as an authentic taco in Las Vegas. Like, calm the fuck down.
Oh my God, did you see those, the a couple of months ago? Or even now in San Diego, a couple of months ago, those white girls wanted to start their own top burrito spot. And and they said that they stole the recipe.
Yeah.
I was like, see, that's bad PR.
They got shut down.
And even the girl
La Fruteria.
La Fruteria. In Barrio Logan, right?
Uh-huh. I feel kind of bad for her.
No, bitch.
That's a place.
I mean, it was a cute concept. I was like, girl, let me steal that idea, girl. Let me go open my own
paletas, girl, too, girl.
Let me open my own fruteria.
That's an example where I don't justify.
But like, see, let me tell you something. To her benefit, that bitch planned that shit. That shit was polished.
Oh,
that shit was so polished, from the marketing to how she even sliced those little mangoes on that salad with that little frozen yogurt. That shit looked bomb. It looked like I would try. I'm like, oh, I'm down to try it. It was a gentrified fruteria. But at least she took her time. And that's the difference.
Yes.
So now what I want to do is, like, I want to do, like, a marketing thing for all the señoras and just, like, do some badass fucking marketing and make it a little bit chipster.
That would be a good art piece, right?
Damn. Make it a
that
little would be chipster. A good art
piece. Yeah.
And then have all them come in, you know, like, oh, yeah, I charge $6 one tamal, you know, because normally they're, like, two or one.
El barrio, she said in there.
El barrio.
Oh, my God.
I know, like, I grow. No, you don't have brown friends. See, that's what happened. Okay, if you're white and you're listening to this, you need to have brown friends, like, that love you and support you and will guide you and be like, listen, girl, that's a good idea. Maybe you shouldn't be the face of it. Maybe, like, let's find somebody else, you know.
And if you are a white person, just know that it's okay to be quiet and listen. Because that's when I go to lectures and talks, that's what I do as a brown person, because I'm there to learn, not to be seen.
So. I know, and then all these questions that are just so long. Like, girl, what was that about?
Like, I didn't want. Was that your resume? Yeah, or are you asking me a fucking question?
And why'd you get up? It's like, why are you standing up? It's not like your outfit is put together. Like, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't talk. No. They'd be the first ones on that mic, huh?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They're like, let me apologize for all white people that ever graced this earth. Yes. I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, girl, you should just sit
like you
down.
Like, attach you yourself to that legacy by yourself. Nobody did that for you.
Yeah.
No, it's like, you know, like, I love the color purple. That's why I said it all my life.
All
I had a fight.
My life, yes.
That's my favorite novel. That's the first book I ever read, like, in eighth grade. I was like, oh, my God, I want to write like Alice Walker, you know.
Yeah.
And I think she did those kind of characters, right? You have all those different characters. Like, you have Miss Millie, who was, like, the well-meaning, intentional. When she, you know, that when she tells Sophia's kids, like, you're going to work for me as a maid. And then,
yeah.
And then... It was just a mess, but I feel like I always think of that archetype of the person that thinks they want to help, but they do more damage than helping. And it, I think when you don't know how to help, it's okay to be quiet and just say like, listen, I'm just gonna listen and follow instead of you taking the initiative. You know, because sometimes you've been, you know, like it's like what if you take the fish out of the water because you think they're drowning. Like, girl, you shouldn't have done that.
And it's an exercise that we can all practice.
Yeah.
Across the board. Just decenter yourself. When it's not about you, girl, it's not about you. And you'll learn a lot.
It's hard. I mean, I'll say it. I'm an artist and it's hard for me because everything's about me.
But that's because that's how artists are trained in this fucking country. It's to center themselves and center their practice in everything that they do. And I do it with students. It's a struggle to like take them away from themselves. But once they start reflecting themselves outside themselves, it's like a whole new world opens. It's an exercise, but it's a struggle.
It's that and also like this romanticization of... the trauma, like every artist that's a famous artist went through something really traumatic and the only reason they're making art is because of their trauma.
You have the Italians to thank for that because it's the Renaissance.
I knew it.
The Renaissance created all those narratives that the first book of artists, The Life of Artists by Vasari, it's all about the biographies and it's all about how Michelangelo did this and Da Vinci did this and he went through this. And all of a sudden, after the 16th century, we start concentrating on the biographies as opposed to their actual visual or material or built environment that they're creating. And by the time we get to Van Gogh, there's sells one painting, pobrecito, and he dealt with all these issues. We construct the narrative of the poor, starving artist, and it's a mess.
And that becomes acceptable. Like, oh, you're a full-time artist. You're probably hungry, huh?
And because not only acceptable, like, it becomes necessary for some people to appreciate you as an artist. And
then when you ask to get paid for doing work, like a lecture or a presentation, they look at you shocked because they expect you to work for free.
Yeah,
they're doing you a favor.
When I started that a lot, people like would do that, like email me for exposure. I'm like, bitch, I have Instagram and Facebook.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a new day. I'm sorry, girl, we're not there no more. But, you know, one of the things I started doing when I would get those requests, I made like a fake agent. And in my oh my God, I'm doubting myself right now. If you ever got one of these emails from me, I apologize, but it was, you know, my survival mode. I was like, I got a fake agent. and so I was like, I'm gonna forward this to my agent who manages all my bookings, and then I would go on to the other email and then I would reply.
Bitch,
Como
dice Pablito, I'm chuket right now.
Chuket.
Yeah. I would reply as a white person.
What was their name?
Mike Henderson.
Harry and the Henderson.
I was like, oh, hi. Thank you so much for the request. Yossi Mari loves the concept. I always tell people that I'm booked because I am. Well, right now I am booked.
Yeah.
But like when you create that urgency, they want more. And then because it's also for us as artists, it's really hard to talk about money and how to get paid. Mm-hmm. And that's another fault because nobody trains us how much our art is worth.
Nobody talks about it. We're independent. Nobody's transparent.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They're like, nobody knows. Like, oh, what are you charging? No, what are you charging?
Yeah.
So then I would, and then when I had another person that it wasn't, you weren't dealing with me, you had to talk numbers with the other person, it was a lot easier to be like, this is a percentage that I charge, and this is the accommodations that I need. And sure enough, I think those folks, they took that more serious.
Yeah.
Than being, because it's, damn, it's very hard.
But what is the name of our agent?
The Hood.
Agent is going to be a white woman. A strong white woman. What's it gonna be? Well, let's make up her name right now.
It's gonna be her first name is gonna be Brandy. Is that strong?
Brandy. Oof, that's too. It reminds me of Brandy, like the black Brandy. Uh-huh. Whitney.
You need like a Samantha.
Oh,
Samantha Richardson.
Or like, what about like a woman with a man's name, like Taylor. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Taylor, and then her last name.
Is something she... long with a lot of S's and C's.
Oh, S's and C's. Schmidt.
Like Taylor Schmidt.
Schmidt, but yeah. Like a lot of silent letters in there.
Uh-huh. Like
C-H.
That you don't know how to spell it. Like, D-T. What does that sound?
Yeah, yeah.
So we are Latinos Who Lunch at latinoswholunch@gmail.com. Please refer to Taylor Schmidt for any bookings.
John and Jacob Jingle Taylor Schmidt. That's what it sounds like. Oh yeah, my no, gosh.
This is just a little tip for you artists out there. They're struggling. Thank you. With your...
We need that. We definitely need that. Yeah.
No, it's true. And probably Google it because you can. I've Googled a lot of times because I don't know. Like, I mostly make sculpture mm-hmm. as work, and I've been doing a lot of different things. I started doing video and paintings and stuff, and I didn't know how much to charge for that kind of stuff.
And you know, like the other thing that it would get
me. And the internet helped me.
Yeah, the internet helps you because there's like charts and whatever, how much you know. But the other thing that gets me too, as people of color, we're so underpaid. And it's, for me, it's irritating that I do a lot of public speaking. If you're paying like a public speaker that happens to be white, you know, whatever amount, and then you're booking me and you want to lowball me, like, no, you should pay me the same amount that you're paying that person, you know? And they think that we're gonna do it simply because, you know, we need exposure. But sometimes it's good to say no. Sometimes it's like, maybe come back next year and I'll do it, you know?
Well, I've given people prices now and they don't email me back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, fine, bitch, I'm booked anyway.
Yeah,
but
I think that's a lot of... I've been training a lot of artists and most of them are scared of that. It's like, oh, I'm going to come like a snob or people are not going to book me nowhere. But I'm like, girl, listen, the world is so big and maybe if that opportunity wasn't for you, there'll be another one. And it's okay to be like, let it go and they'll find somebody else.
Yep.
And the other thing of the culture is with the artists is like... We're on this together, so when you lowball yourself, you're also doing a disservice to other artists because you're letting them know that
you're sending setting the standard.
They're like, oh, if you're doing it for that amount, why would I book you when they're doing it for that amount?
Yes,
damn. Girl.
No, girl, we all have to come together and be like, listen, we need to be serious about how to get paid for
that's the first time I ever figured that out because I was in a show with all Latinos last year. I'm not going to name what show it was, but you know, everybody got really close and they're like, girl, what airline did you use? Girl, they flew me first class. And I was like, what?
Yes.
And they're like, oh yeah. And they gave me this and they gave me that and they gave me that. And I'm over here like eating sandwiches from 7-Eleven, mm-hmm. just like trying to survive. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, I see what these people are
doing. Girl, don't
I
feel
see
guilty.
Your true colors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't feel guilty for getting money for your art, girl. Like, girl, yes.
Yes. Yes. That's a message to everybody. Know your worth. It's really important. Anyway, change the subject because
let's talk about books. What are your favorite authors? We were talking about how, you know, I feel like I'm not a this is like against all the Chicanas crucify me all the time because I tell people that I'm not an Ansel Dua fan.
Yes.
I feel like if Ansel Dua was living now, she would edit Borderlands. She would like, oh shit, I should have done that. And as a writer, I think of that a lot. I was like, oh my god, I can do that again, but I'm wiser. I should edit it, right? But I get a lot of slack for that. I'm like, I like bitches like Alice Walker, Toni Braxton too. Toni Morrison, James Baldwin, like really intense folks like that. Like I feel, and I'm a huge nerd. Like I'm telling you, like sometimes, you know, guys come over to my house, cause, you know, she's like that. And and I have a bunch of books in my house, right? Cause that's what I do for fun when I'm bored. And then they'll be like, are you in college? I'm like, no, I read for fun. And then they're like, oh, that's...
They're like, head breaks.
That's weird. And so I kind of, my house has become like an EOP office. I ended up hooking up. Like, oh, do you have a resume? Like, one time I met this guy. He came over. And he's like, yeah, I want to go to college. I'm like, oh, cute. What school do you want to go to? He's like, I don't know. I want to do nursing. I'm like, oh, let me look up who has a nursing program. But yeah, like I'm telling you, I'm a huge nerd. I love literature.
So who are your favorite authors?
So right now I am reading... Sherman Alexie just did a book with his mom. It's super intense. It's called You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. And it's really, really intense about his mom. And it's really beautiful. And I've been reading... There's this other book by this other author that's titled, he's Asian, and it's titled I Love Yours for White People. But I'm reading these plays because, you know, these books, because it's about relationship between immigrants and their mothers. And I think a lot of times there's also this romanticized idea that mm-hmm. we're close to our moms.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, you know, other people are not, there's still tension. So I think I really love those kind of books. And I love deconstructing the
myth. Yes.
Yeah. The myth of the immigrants and their mothers. And that's the one I'm reading right now. I love Sherman Alexie. Yeah.
So I've been in school forever. So I'm always pushed to read a chapter from this, a chapter for that.
Yeah.
And it's all like super academic things. But the book that has shaped the way that I write, the way that I approach everything, is a book called Silencing the Past by Michael Rolfe Treloe, where he deconstructs how history works and how it's basically a bundle of silences, where you have the event that happens and then somebody writes about the event, and between those two events, you create a silence. And then from that event, it goes to a library. According to what institution, what library, you create another silence. And then you have a writer that goes and picks up that book from that library and reinterprets it, and then it's another silence. And then he basically talks about how by the end, by the way we get the finished printed history book, is nothing but a bundle of silences that we have to reconstruct all over again. And he uses the history of El Día de la Raza, or October 12th, the discovery of the Americas, and how that became how we celebrate it today. It's a bundle of silences. And then he concentrates on the revolution in Haiti. It's a book that it's 150 pages, and I've read it like 4 times. And wow. I keep going. Every time I write something new, no matter what I do, I come back to it. It's one of those books that it's so dense, yet so easy to read, that I come back to it over and over and over and over again. And I have it. I have the PDF. I give it to all my students. How many they read, I don't know, but they have it now.
I hate giving books to people because they don't read them.
Yeah, I when it comes to class, I just give my students readings, because that's what people did for me. They gave me hundreds and hundreds of essays and books, and they're there. But I know that at some point, I'm going to go back to them, you know? So I want to do the same.
I used to be that kind of boyfriend that when I was dating someone, I'm like, I would get so excited. There's a really good, amazing book you should read. So you, and it was a clue. Like, I'm giving you books so you can get to know me.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you can like eventually see if this is going to work out or not. So I give you like, these are the books that have shaped my understanding, and I think you should read them. And I feel like every time you date, you should have a list that you should give.
But that's setting expectations too high.
Is it?
Yeah. I would never do that, because I feel like I will.
I mean, your expectations, girl, bitch.
No, like, I have my seminal books that will be ideal for my dude to read them. But if I put that out there, it's not. No, I don't think you can do that to somebody.
Well, we'll see, honey. We'll see.
You guys know I can't read, so I can't really chime in here.
You have your books.
No, I'm just gonna be frank. I usually read trendy stuff because ever since I was, when I was in high
school. Like beach reads or like what?
No,
what
like trendy? I really loved like Oprah, for example.
Oh, okay.
So when I was in high school, so I was part of her Oprah book club. So I read all that Toni Morrison shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like
Oprah told you.
She told me to
whatever
read it.
Whatever Oprah
told me, I read it. And it's kind of still the case. Like right now, I love watching like people expose Scientologists. Uh-huh. So I'm reading all those books. Like,
oh, that's cute.
Going Clear and Lilia Remini book and all that shit. And I got a lot of Selena stuff because we're going to eventually do a Selena
at some point
podcast, like just like really episode. Diving deep. Mm-hmm. So,
hey, yeah, Maria Celestia.
I just finished that finally.
Maria Celestia Raras.
What's Selena's secret? Like, what was it? I don't know. So I'm like, secret. I read the whole book.
You're piecing together the silences of the Selena.
Oh my God. People won't shut up about her. Awesome. Oh my gosh. And yeah, and I'm going to read Selenidad next.
That's
which is
so
really good.
Cute.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I read stuff like that too, like the Jenny Rivera book. I read it in one sitting. I was like,
did
Jenny,
you see the telenovela?
I know. That was really bad produced. I was like, Jenny.
Oh, it was so good.
No, that was too long.
All right, let's take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll come back with some recommendations with our dear guest, Yosimar Reyes.
All right, so it's time once again to read one of your fabulous reviews that people leave in iTunes.
You know,
iTunes.
It's so important that you review us because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And visibility is?
Essential.
Yes. Okay, so here we have one from chick.magnet. 5 stars only.
That's right.
Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. This podcast is everything. It's fun and honest and so delicious. The way that they approach and... Oh, shit. The way that they approach art and culture is refreshing AF. I really enjoy having their perspectives on issues of art and representation as they relate to my own experience as a Latinx artist. Listening to it feels so familiar, like I'm hanging out with my two best friends. The famous artist and the distinguished doctor. This inspired.
Ay, que perra. Yes, girl. I want friends like you.
They inspire me every week by being a consistent source of self-made Latinx media. Shout out to you, Chick Magnet. Thank you so much for your reviews. I know everybody's updated their iPhones now. And it's really...
It happened overnight for everybody.
I know. It just happened to me. So you have to scroll. You have to find Latinos Who Lunch, then scroll down and you can see the reviews and just click write a review. Do it now if you haven't done it. If you've been listening to this fucking podcast for what, 50 episodes for free and haven't even left us a review, bitch, get your life together.
Get you. Put attention.
And we're back.
Hi.
It's time for recommendations, y'all.
I'll start.
You want to start or do you want to let our guest start?
No, I'll start.
Okay,
great. Our distinguished guest will
go towards
the end.
You yelled at me last time for starting and okay.
I'm starting a new trend. So, So I've been listening to very few albums. Okay. I've actually been listening to a lot of Latin American protest music because it goes along to a lot of the art that I'm looking at in my contemporary Latin American art. Mercedes Sosa, Silvio Rodriguez. I'm not gonna recommend that because that doesn't need to be recommended. But there's a new album that just came out by Bjork, and you cannot go wrong with Bjork. Bjork has a renaissance right now, and it's putting some of the most amazing music she's ever done in her entire career. The album is called Utopia, and this is the album after the breakup. The last album that she released, Vulnicura, it was her breakup album. It was dramatic. It was so good. And this album, it's all about dating, having sex, love, and it's almost like she's finding herself again. But in connection with Latino cultural makers, one of the producers, the co-producer of the album is Alejandro Guercy, and some of you may know Alejandro Guercy as Arca. He has a whole collection of albums that range from crazy experimental acid reggaeton to just plain noise music that is absolutely amazing. The self-titled album that came out in April is one of the best albums of the year. I also recommend it very much. But for this time, I'm going to stay with, again, Bjork's one of the most beautiful albums she's released. Again, it's called Utopia. Yeah.
Noise.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recommendations. I mean, there's so much stuff, you know, that's out there. I think for me, like, this weekend was really, I felt really, really good because, you know, I came to work and to do these events, but I also came with my friends. And for me, it's like, it's amazing that I've been able to create a network up on a community of people that are just doing really badass things.
Yes.
I think for me, like, one of the people that, if you do not know who they are, that you should definitely check out is Bambi Salcedo. She has become like our favorite. And if you don't know who Bambi Salcedo is, I suggest you Google her. She has a documentary out called Transvisible. She's a trans Latina who is the CEO of the Trans Latina Coalition.
Amen.
And she's just doing so much badass work nationally that I think a lot of folks should, and also like doing working with trans Latinas who are undocumented, who are in deportation proceedings, and just all that. So Bambi's really amazing. So yeah, a shout out to her. I would definitely a recommendation if you're looking for or people whose work you want to check out. Definitely check out Bambi.
I'll put some of those links in our website.
Yeah, yeah. Petushka. Well, I am going to recommend a podcast again that I've never listened to, but I'm always giving people shout outs because we should try different things out, you know, support each other. And Kim Chi, the drag queen, said recently on Twitter, it's like, if you can't name 10 local queens, but you can name 10 RuPaul's drag race queens, you're not a real drag fan. You're just a RuPaul's drag race fan, right?
Damn.
Drag girl.
Drag her.
Damn, I only know like 4 or 5.
I know. So same thing with podcasts, right? We're in Las Vegas. Like, we're not the only podcast here. When have we like searched for podcasts from Las Vegas?
There's the sports girls. I forget their names.
Yes, good, good. Thank you for mentioning them and not knowing their name. No, but I went to go see Yosimar talk today at Nevada State College, and I met some amazing people there, and they started their own podcast there called Nevada State College Dreamers Club, where they get together and they put out this podcast with the different organizations at the school. So I just want to give them a shout out, and I can't wait to listen. And while I was there, I met with Carla Rodriguez, who was on one of our previous podcast episodes, and they're going to start.
No Mas White Tears
is the name of that episode.
Yes.
And I'm just going to announce it here. They're going to start their own podcast, Carla and...
Damn, I love that!
And Erika, and so I'll keep you guys updated because we're going to be their number one fans because it was so awesome having them on the show. I can't wait for them. And I said, girl, come over to my house. You can borrow my equipment.
Yes!
That shit is happening.
Good.
I'm so excited.
I love that. Wow, local podcast. It's happening. It's happening.
We're going to start a movement.
You're going to be in Podcasterio next year.
It's going to be called Down.
Down. Bambi should have a podcast.
Oh my gosh, imagine...
I want to thank you for being in our show, Yosimar. We've been following you for a while now in Instagram. We've been following your work, and it was a pleasure to hear you live. Stay away. And having you in the podcast and get your perspective about things that we talk about. It's just so amazing. So again, thank you so much
for having me. I think it's really amazing. I love hanging out with snobby gay boys.
Oh, shit. I'll take it.
No, just saying. Nerdy gay boy. I feel like it's just, I don't know. I think that you're definitely creating a space for a lot of us who've never felt like, you know, we can just be ourselves. So thank you for creating this space.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. All right. As always, you can email us at latinoswholunch.com. Visit our website, latinoswholunch.com. Oh, I said that twice. Fuck! I always fucked that up. You can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Send us an email at latinoswholunch@gmail.com.
That's right.
All right. And as always, please go on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to us, and leave us a review. 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and visibility is...
essential.
I'm Fabi Fab.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Bye. God bless America.